Kevin,
for me.
Where is this chip on your shoulder coming from? I mean, you're here. You're in WWE. You're a champion. And in your first match in WWE, you beat John Cena.
Hey, you want to call it a chip on my shoulders? I don't think that's what it is. But you want to know where it might come from? That right there is a great example. Okay? You say my first match in WWE. I've been defending the NXT title with pride for several months now. Is NXT not part of WWE? Because I'm pretty sure last time I checked, it is. When I signed my contract with this company, it didn't say I was signing to NXT. It said I was signing to WWE. I won that title, and I considered myself part of WWE, and I have, and I've been defending it like that. So here's the thing. People need to stop downplaying that. I've even said that myself, because it sounds great. In his first match in WWE, he beat John Cena. Well, the fact is, it wasn't my first match in WWE, okay? I've been here for months, and I've been killing myself, working as hard as I can to bring pride to that title.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 388 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, June 21st, 2015. I am the Solid Monster. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. It's a tough day for me. My first Father's Day without my dad, so I can relate to what Cody and Dustin are probably going through right now, having just lost their dad last week. Dusty Rhodes' funeral took place on Wednesday. Tons of wrestlers turned out, everybody from NXT, and Cody posted his eulogy for his dad online on his Twitter account. Very, very good. You should give it a read if you haven't already done so. Thanks, by the way, to everybody for all the positive feedback to my Dusty tribute on last week's show. Very happy that you enjoyed it. He was one of the biggest stars in the history of the business, and so all the press, all the publicity, all the tributes, the outpouring, everything else, it's been, I think I made the comment last week, especially in terms of publicity, like mainstream publicity, really haven't seen anything like this since Randy Savage died back in 2011. And somebody said to me, well, did you forget about the Ultimate Warrior? And it's funny because I actually did when I made that comment, but even if I would have remembered the Warrior did not get the kind of mainstream publicity that Savage did, and certainly not that Dusty did. I mean, Warrior was a big name in wrestling, and I think there were a lot of people in the media who grew up wrestling fans back in the day with Hogan and Andre and Macho Man who did remember the Ultimate Warrior, and it was a big deal, but not nearly as big as Savage or Dusty. So he will definitely be missed. You know, somebody pointed out to me, WrestleMania 6 was Dusty's only in-ring appearance at a WrestleMania, and it was a mixed tag match. It was him and Sapphire against the Macho King and Sensational Queen Sherry. Savage, Sherry, Elizabeth, who also came out for that match, Sapphire, and now Dusty Rhodes, all dead. Every single one of them dead. I think maybe the referee is the only person still living from that match. That's really depressing. I mean, 1990 was over 20 years ago, but again, we weren't dealing with people who were that old even then. It wasn't that long ago, and to think that they're just all wiped out, it's just really depressing when you think about it. And when you start going through those old cards, like from that period, late 80s, early 90s, WrestleMania cards, SummerSlam cards, it's unbelievable the number of people who were dead. It's just, it's incredible. I don't know how it would compare to any other sport, form of entertainment. If you go back and look at some of the, you know, Super Bowl teams from back then, teams that won the World Series, and like around that same time period, it would be very interesting, I think, to go back and see how many of those people are still among the living as compared to the wrestlers from that period. I think you're going to see a lot of wrestlers who are gone, and probably a lot of baseball and football players, I would say probably the majority of which are still around. It just blows me away when I think about it. Audible is offering listeners of this podcast a free audiobook. That deal is still ongoing for you guys. You can pick a book of your choice when you sign up for a 30-day trial membership of the service. Just go to audibletrial.com/solemonster. You have over 180,000 titles to choose from. One of the books you can get for free is the Dusty Rhodes book he did many years ago, Reflections of Wrestling's American Dream. I've mentioned that way back when, you know, when I plug, you can get the Junkyard Dog book, the Lex Luger book, the Hulk Hogan book, and I've mentioned from time to time the Dusty Rhodes book. And, you know, everyone's all fixated now on watching old Dusty matches and hearing Dusty stories. It's not narrated by him. I mean, how great would that be if he actually narrated this book himself? But if you want to know more about the Dream's life and his career, in his own words, just use our URL. You can grab it for free, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. You have to go through the sign-up process, and then you can cash in your free audiobook. We also have a store on ProWrestlingTees.com, ProWrestlingTees.com/Solomonster/SoundsOff. Got to put the full name of the show in there. We have up to a size 5XL on all of our shirts. They ship all over the world, so please support the podcast by buying a shirt. And lastly, if you would like to make a donation to the show, if you like what you hear every single week, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. The PayPal box is on the right-hand side. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. $30 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out for your own podcast or YouTube channel, what have you. Just make sure you send me that information when you send in your donation. Thank you to everybody who donated this week, including Chuck Lunatic Lentz, Guilty as Charged Mark Court, the Australian Ass Kicker Anthony Patty, Malicious Intent Michael Cuomo, Sean the Mangler Tanger, Parvinder Smashmouth Singh, Ryan Machine Gun McTaggart, Skywalker Marcus Skeet, the Glamour Girl Katie Padilla, who celebrates a birthday this Friday. Happy birthday, Glamour Girl. Not to be confused with the Grammar Girl, whose voice you hear mangling my name at the end of each and every episode of this podcast. So thank you to everybody who donated, and again, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. I really appreciate it. Bellator had a show on Friday night on Spike TV. Bellator is to UFC, I guess what WCW would have been to WWE back in the day. It's the closest comparison I can make. And they had a show. The main event was Ken Shamrock, former WWE superstar and a UFC champion, against Kimbo Slice. This was a freak show fight. Kimbo Slice is 41 years old. Ken Shamrock is 51 years old. And I got to say, you know, Kimbo looked okay. He looked pretty good. You know, you would look at him and not necessarily think, hey, this guy is 40. You look at Ken Shamrock, and he looked every bit of his 51 years and then some. He looked old. He looked old. And really, both guys looked old once the fight got going. It was just slow, and it was sad. I mean, the highlight probably of the fight was the fact, and this is why I bring it up, that Road Warrior Animal came out as part of Ken Shamrock's entrance. They actually played the LOD theme music, and how they were able to pull that one off, I don't know. They may end up getting a nasty letter from WWE Legal. But they played the Road Warriors theme song, and out came Road Warrior Animal with the face paint and the shoulder pad, looking like a badass. And then Ken Shamrock came out with his family. I guess, you know, they must still be friends going back to their WWF days. I was trying to think back. I can't really remember a match, or I was having trouble remembering any match or storyline that LOD and Shamrock would have been involved in. But I guess the only thing I could come up with was Shamrock and LOD were on that team with Goldust and Austin when they wrestled the Hart family at the Canadian Stampede, which one of the best matches in company history. Otherwise, I don't know. I don't know what the relationship would be there. But anyway, Animal was there, and that was probably the most interesting part of that whole fight. Shamrock lost. Shamrock had a choke locked in. I don't know how the hell Kimbo Slice got out of it. I mean, Shamrock, I don't know. I mean, there were people watching that thinking, this is clearly a work. I wouldn't go that far, but I thought Shamrock had the fight won. I mean, he had this guy dead to rights in this like rear naked choke, and somehow Kimbo Slice got out. Shamrock just didn't have anything. He had nothing. He had no strength. He had no speed. He had nothing. There was just like this dead look in his eyes. He looked terrible. I hope he doesn't fight again. 51 years old. Come on. You know, he shouldn't be fighting. He looked great physically. You know, his body did, and Shamrock has a history of PED use. So I'll leave that up to your imagination if you think he had any help, which I think he did, but who knows. Bret Hart delivered his State of WWE address to Sports Illustrated. Not that anybody asked for it, but he gave it to them anyway. And it was actually very newsworthy. Here's the thing I love about Bret. The thing I love about Bret Hart is that I don't know if it's the stroke or what, but he's always been outspoken. It just seems more so since the stroke, since he's retired. He just speaks his mind without any attention paid to what the company thinks or to the people he's talking about, what they may think. He's flip-flopped so many times on whether the kick to the head by Goldberg was a freak accident or a reckless move. One minute he says that he and Goldberg are cool and they've squashed it. And then a few weeks ago before that Legends show at Citi Field that I went to, he started talking shit about Goldberg again. And then at the Legends show, they were both there, and there they are, smiling and taking pictures together. You know, but Brett doesn't sugarcoat things. That's what I like about him. He did say one thing in the article that really bothered me, but the really big stuff was about Daniel Bryan. This is the quote. This is what Bret Hart had to say about Daniel Bryan in this interview and Daniel Bryan's injury. He said, "Daniel Bryan is finished. He will never wrestle again. I don't think he knows it yet. I feel terrible about Daniel Bryan. For all intents and purposes, he had the exact same thing happen to him that happened to me after Bill Goldberg kicked me in the head. One day you learn it's over. Doctors tell you that you can't wrestle and you'll never wrestle again. He's finished forever, but I don't think he's even realized that. He's probably thinking maybe it will get better in a few months. But unfortunately, I don't think it will." Wow. That's pretty declarative, what Brett said right there. Now, Brett, you know, he's been on a few WWE shows here and there. I mean, he was out a few weeks ago to introduce Sami Zayn. I know Brian, I think Brian has been at most, if not all, of the Raw shows. I think he's traveling with Brie. So it's very possible that him and Brian have been talking. I'm sure Brett does know more than we all do about what Brian's injury is. Now, did Brian want Brett to go out and tell everybody? Probably not. But I absolutely believe Brett knows more about this than we do, and that is, it's very distressing. It's very distressing to hear that. Now, I don't know if that means it's concussion-related, because there were a lot of rumors that it was concussion-related, or if it's about the neck. I don't know. You see, people keep talking about his neck. And I was of the impression that Brian's neck was okay, because whatever the neck issue was, he had that surgery over a year ago. It was in May of last year that he had the operation on the neck. And I think at that point, the neck was okay. What was keeping him out for so long was this nerve issue, which is why he couldn't get strength in his, I think, his right arm. He couldn't regain strength. They were talking about another surgery, but not a neck surgery. I think they were talking about some sort of maybe an elbow surgery. It had something to do with like the ulnar nerve that runs up his arm, I think, from the elbow. And so, you know, people talk about the neck as though he still has really, really bad neck issues. I'm of the impression the neck is okay. I mean, he's got obviously, you know, still a bad neck. My neck is probably better than his is. But I don't think it's a neck issue. So to me, this sounds like it may be concussion related. And Brian has had a ton of concussions in his career. I mean, I think he's even talked about it. He doesn't even know exactly how many concussions. He's probably had a dozen or more in his career. And think about the wars that this guy had back when he was wrestling for Ring of Honor and in Japan. So, let alone all the ones he suffered in WWE in the last few years. And the bumps that this guy takes, I mean, a lot of that is his own fault. I mean, I feel bad for the guy, I really do. Nobody deserves this. It's a really shitty hand that's been dealt to him. But you know what, at the end of the day, you got to take responsibility for your own actions. When a guy like Luke Harper drops Bryan on his head like he did in that match they had on Raw before WrestleMania, I mean, you could blame Luke Harper all you want to, but Bryan, he took the bump, right? He agreed to take the bump. Maybe it was his idea. It probably was. The guy's nuts. And doing all those missile drop kicks off the top rope and landing on the back of your head and the back of your neck night after night, you know, at some point, your body betrays you, and you got to look in the mirror and say, well, you know, this is what I asked for, because that's the style that I wrestle. It was bound to happen. So you hear what Brett has to say. Brett clearly knows something that we don't, and that's just really distressing. It would be really a shame for Brian's career to just be over like that. No fanfare, no final match, no nothing. I mean, Brian, when he did that promo and gave up the IC title on Raw all those weeks ago, he said, "I will be back." But maybe that's wishful thinking. Maybe that's what Brett means. You know, he thinks he's going to come back. He wants to come back. But maybe he won't. You know, WWE wouldn't clear Edge. I'm sure Edge would have wanted to come back, and they said, "We're not going to let you. That's it. You're done." And Edge said, "It wasn't my decision to make. They made the decision for me." So if WWE says, "Listen, you know, you're too much of a liability. You're hurt. Your scans say that this is messed up and that's messed up," I mean, that could be it. You know, maybe we have seen the last Daniel Bryan match. So to me, that was the most newsworthy thing to come out of this. You know, Brett talked about a lot of different things. He talked about the problems that WWE had in terms of how they pushed Roman Reigns before WrestleMania, what a mistake it was to push him the way they did, which, you know, everybody has talked about. I talked about on this show. That's why Roman Reigns was you know, betrayed by the fans the way he was. You know, when they announced that Daniel Bryan was going to come back and be in the Royal Rumble, they basically cut off Roman's balls when they did that because people wanted Bryan. They wanted him to win. They wanted him to go back to WrestleMania, right? He never actually lost the championship. They had this built-in story. Everybody thought that's where they were going. And if they knew they weren't, then they shouldn't have put Bryan in the damn match in the first place. So they really just did no favors to Roman Reigns in those first few months of the year. Now they're finally starting to rehab him, but it's taken 6 months to do so. He also put over Cody Rhodes. Huge. He put Cody over big time in this interview. He buried guys who loudly call spots during their matches. I'm not going to name any names. But this is what he said. This is a great quote, and I agree with this 100%. He said, "If you watch punches, kicks, and moves where there is contact, Cody Rhodes is one of the best. I watch a lot of wrestlers in WWE throw the phoniest, worst punches. WWE tries to cut camera at the last second. In my day, wrestling had to look pretty real. Cody Rhodes' punches are right in there, his kicks are right in there, and you never see Cody Rhodes talking in the ring. You see a lot of wrestlers who aren't good professionals talking and calling spots in the ring. They're oblivious to the fact that all the fans can see them calling a high spot to the guy. There is an art to wrestling, and there is a need to do it right. Cody Rhodes exemplifies all the right things." So, really talking up Cody Rhodes, and I agree, Cody's really good, and I hope when he comes back, you know, leave Stardust in the past, and let's see what this guy can do on his own with a renewed push. But I thought those quotes about the punches and about the spot calling, both of which relate to John Cena. Now, I don't know when he made that quote if he in his mind was thinking John Cena, because I know Brett likes John Cena a lot. I don't think he'd go out publicly and bury the guy. But maybe that was his kind of roundabout way to bury the guy without naming names. Because when I think phony punches and I think loud spot calling, I think of one person. I think of John Cena. Now, he's not the only one who does it. I don't want to make it sound like, ooh, John Cena's the only person who calls spots. But when I think of the worst offenders in WWE, both of those things, he's number one. And he's the top guy in the company. And this is Bret Hart saying that he doesn't think guys that do that are professional. I mean, that's pretty tough. That's pretty tough stuff, right? I wouldn't say John Cena is unprofessional. I just think, you know, for a guy in his position, you would think that he would do a better job of throwing a freaking punch and not calling out spots loudly in the ring where the people in the upper deck can hear him. He bashed the decision not to have Cody and Goldust settle their feud in a match at WrestleMania, which is where we all thought it was going. I was hoping that's what was going to happen. They would get their big WrestleMania match, and they didn't get it. And Brett thought that was a mistake. They could have had something kind of like what he and Owen had. I mean, it wouldn't have been that big. It wasn't going to be a main event match. But they went in a different direction. And look what they had them doing. Was Stardust even on the show? He was in the IC match, I think. And Goldust was just a body in the Battle Royal. Nobody gave a shit about Goldust. Talk about dropping the ball on something. The one thing that irked me about this interview with Brett, though, this really bothered me. He talked about Tyson Kidd's injury. And this is what Brett said. I'll just read you what he said here. He says, "I only know he's hurt pretty bad and they're crossing their fingers. I'm not sure if he's going to need surgery, but it seems to me there was a lot of poor planning involved in that injury. I don't know whose fault it is or why an injury like that happened, but somebody is accountable. WWE has done a lot the last few years to improve conditions for wrestlers. They have doctors there and they give wrestlers adequate time to prepare. But in looking at what happened with Tyson Kidd, clearly, there is still room for improvement." Now, he doesn't elaborate on what he means by that. I mean, did they rush him out there? Did he not have time to stretch? I don't know. Obviously, look, I mean, Natalya's part of the family, and Kid's married to Natalya. Kid's basically married into that Hart family, so I'm sure they're all very close. I'm sure Brett has spoken with him, and again, I'm sure he knows more than we do. But he doesn't elaborate on what he means by that. What does he mean that they didn't give him enough time to prepare? He doesn't say. But keep in mind, okay, one of the things that Brett said there, he said, "I don't know whose fault it is," right? That's what he said. Now, on Samoa Joe and the Muscle Buster, which may have been the move that Tyson got hurt taking, this is what Brett said. He said, "It's extremely dangerous." He's talking about the Muscle Buster now. It's extremely dangerous. The move that Samoa Joe did was a reckless move, and the way they rushed that match beforehand in the back without giving Tyson time to prepare was a mistake. Tyson is pound for pound one of the best wrestlers in the world. It's a shame that a guy who is that talented and given so much to the company over the years is hurt, but I just hope it's not so serious that his career is over. I mean, he had some, I mean, that's some pretty hard stuff on Samoa Joe there. You're talking about the guy being reckless and basically blaming it on him. You know, he's kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth here. We don't know whose fault it is. But then he goes and talks about what a reckless move it was. Now, if you're Samoa Joe and you read this, I mean, what must be going through his head? You got Bret Hart talking to Sports Illustrated, basically saying that Samoa Joe broke this fucker's neck because he was reckless in the ring. And Samoa Joe is not known to be a reckless guy. Samoa Joe is still on the NXT house shows, using the muscle buster. So clearly the company doesn't blame him. They don't blame the move. It was a fluke thing. It was a fluke accident. If they thought the move was dangerous, he wouldn't be still using it. So for Bret Hart to go out there, and I'm sure Samoa Joe feels bad anyway, even if it wasn't his fault. You know, he feels bad. Somebody got hurt. And then Bret goes out there and basically blames it on him. Calls him reckless. That's pretty shitty. Again, unless Bret knows something about that we don't, it doesn't seem to me like Bret is in a position to be publicly blaming Samoa Joe and calling him reckless. That's a fucked up thing to do. By all accounts, it was an accident. And the Muscle Buster may not have even had anything to do with it. We don't know. Again, they're still letting him use the move. There's no heat on him. I haven't heard rumors and reports that there's heat on Samoa Joe. He's in trouble. He's got a rep for being reckless. No, none of that's true. Accidents happen. So I thought that was really low. I thought that was really shitty for Bret to do. You got an issue with Samoa Joe. You think he may have had something to do with it. Then take it up with Samoa Joe. Don't go doing interviews blaming the guy. The guy feels bad enough, I'm sure, about what happened. You know, now you're going to tag him with this? I thought he went too far. I thought that was fucked up. But a lot of the other stuff that Bret said in this interview I thought was very valid. I don't think it's necessarily some old guy coming off as bitter. I think there's a lot of valid criticism about the booking and a lot of the other stuff. And like I said, that's what I like about Bret. He's got a good relationship with WWE. They invite him in. He does shows, right? They're on good terms. But it doesn't stop him from going out there and you know, when they do stuff that's stupid, he calls him out on it. So many guys, they've got legends deals, and they've got, you know, special relationships with WWE, and they won't say one cross word about the company. Bret doesn't give a shit. Bret doesn't give a shit, and that's what I like about the guy. But the Samoa Joe thing, I thought that was just completely wrong for him to do that. Money in the Bank last weekend, I thought it was a good show. Some absolutely god-awful finishes. I mean, at one point, it was one match after another, after another, after another. Shit finish, shit finish, shit finish. I was begging for a good finish to a match on this show. And thankfully, as the show went on, they finally delivered. The Money in the Bank match that opened the show, I thought was really good. That was one of those shit finishes, but that's a matter of personal preference. Sheamus winning, I'm not a fan of. I mean, I know they need strong heels. I mean, God, do they need strong heels. And Sheamus is a bully, and as a wrestler, Sheamus is very good. I know there's a lot of people who don't like Sheamus. They think he sucks. Sheamus does not suck. Sheamus is a very good wrestler, but he's just very boring and bland. And I know he reinvented his whole character. I think his entrance, I gotta say, his theme music and his entrance, I think is badass. I think Sheamus has one of the best theme songs in the entire company. That I like. But still, there's just something about the guy, it's just very dull. And so he wins this Money in the Bank match, which means he's all but guaranteed to win the championship at some point. Even if he doesn't, I just feel like it's a waste. Can you picture Sheamus as the WWE champion? I mean, maybe if they still had two titles, you'd give him the world title. But they got one championship. Sheamus is going to be the WWE champion? I don't see it. I don't see it. I mean, when they do the cash-in, how they do the cash-in, I don't know. I can only speculate. I really don't know if they're going to do it at SummerSlam, if they may do something at Battleground. But I have a feeling that Sheamus either loses or he wins and then maybe is quickly beaten for it. I don't know. I can't picture him being WWE champion for any real stretch of time. There's just so many guys I would put ahead of him right now. You got one title, not two. You got one. The only time he ever held the WWE title was right after he first came in when he beat Cena for it in that tables match. Otherwise, you know, he held the world title a few times, and that's fine. But when he was the world champion, I don't think there was a single fan who looked at Sheamus as the top champion in the company, because I don't see him at that level. You know, he's very good. He's a good wrestler. He's had some good matches with people. Him and Daniel Bryan, for example, they had great chemistry. But he's not a top guy. He never will be. So I feel like putting the briefcase with him is just a complete waste of the briefcase. I would have put the briefcase on Kofi Kingston before I put it on Sheamus, because I still think my idea was better than the one they went with. But they obviously felt differently. I guess he was supposed to win it last year and he didn't, and so they wanted to, I don't know if they felt they owed him something. This whole notion of somebody being owed something is comical to me. You know, if it doesn't make storyline sense, then don't fucking do it. So I was not a fan of Sheamus winning the match. The match itself, though, was very good. You know, Ryback in the Big Show with The Miz running in for the countout, just a fucking waste of time. As were a lot of the other matches, the Divas match, just, you know, with Twin Magic. So many shit finishes on this show. But then we got to John Cena and Kevin Owens, and that made up for everything. They had an even better match than the one they did at Elimination Chamber. I think it was Match of the Year candidate, one of the most fun matches I've seen in WWE all year, you know, here in the first 6 months of the year. They just had a great match. I mean, Cena busted out like half a Canadian destroyer at one point, for God's sakes. I mean, say what you want to about John Cena, the guy fucking tries. It doesn't always look very good, but he tries. So that was pretty cool. Now, Cena won, unfortunately. I would not have had Cena win, but he won. But they did the best they could with it, because when the match was over, they had Kevin Owens attack him, and he gave Cena an apron powerbomb. So even though Cena won the match, Owens came out looking strong. He walked out on his own power. John Cena did not. He needed help to get to the back. So they handled that very well. They just had a kick-ass match. I really just don't see how anybody can complain, even with Cena winning. How can you complain about a match like that? The one thing I noticed, which I also loved about this match, and it made the match even that much better, not a single time do I remember either of those two going outside the ring, grabbing weapons, tables, chairs, anything like that. It was all action inside the ring. I don't think they left one time. Same thing with their first match. I don't remember them going outside, doing a spot through the announcer's table, throwing a guy into the steel steps. Maybe they did once. I mean, I can't remember. And people were raving about both matches as Match of the Year candidates. They kept it in the ring, and people bought into it. They didn't need all the smoke and mirrors and the plunder and the weapons. So kudos to both of them for pulling that off, because a lot of guys have to resort to that just to get a reaction, just to get a pop from the crowd. And these guys were able to do it without doing any of that stuff. The New Day lost the tag team title. Shocked the hell out of me. I mean, the New Day had something good going, finally, after all these months, and they take the titles off of them. I mean, I'm happy for Darren and Titus, but, you know, I don't expect them to have those titles very long. I figure, you know, Harper and Rowan, I don't know what they're doing with the two of them. They haven't been on TV on any of the main shows much lately. Maybe they're going to drop it to them. Maybe they'll just drop it back to the New Day. I say just drop it back to the New Day. Those guys had a good thing going. All of a sudden, they're losing matches. I mean, Money in the Bank could have been a big night for them. Kofi could have gotten the briefcase. They could have had the tag team titles. They could have, you know, gone around gloating about it. It would have been very funny. But they took the titles off of them. They put it on the primetime players. Main event, Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose ladder match. They gave them almost 40 minutes. This was the longest championship match I can remember in years in WWE. WWE does not do title matches that go 35, 40 minutes anymore. So you got Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose out there, two of the best guys in the company. They got great chemistry. I love watching them one-on-one. And it was a really good match. But I think some people are overrating this match. Now, I had trouble staying awake during the match. Now, I admit I may have just been tired. I can't necessarily blame the match. But obviously, if the match was more exciting, I wouldn't have been dozing off. So I think there may have been a little too much, you know, going after the leg, selling the leg, like with Ambrose, you know. And you would think, oh, they're selling a body part, right? Great psychology. Well, yeah, great psychology until 24 hours later when Dean Ambrose, one minute his leg is hurt, and the next minute he's sprinting around the ring like nothing's wrong. I mean, I wouldn't exactly call that great psychology. But the match itself, I mean, was very good. There just wasn't really much to it. It wasn't you know, one of the best ladder matches I've ever seen. Probably not even top 20 best ladder matches in the company, let alone in wrestling, that I've ever seen. But it was fine. The finish, they did kind of a controversial finish where both guys had their hands on the belt, pulled it down at the exact same time, and when they landed, Rollins had possession of it. And so he was declared the winner. And I guess they just didn't want to beat Dean Ambrose clean, and so that was the best finish they could come up with, which, whatever. That's how they went off the air. It was still a good match, though. That and the Owens match, I really can't see how you can call Money in the Bank anything but at least good. I won't call it very good or excellent, but it was good. You know, it was good. Monday Night Raw was live from Cleveland, Ohio this past Monday night. Dean Ambrose interrupted Seth Rollins at the start of the show. They brawled around ringside. Rollins escaped, and so Ambrose took a seat in the middle of the ring. He refused to leave. Stone Cold Dean Ambrose refused to leave the ring until Rollins came back out. So he was holding the show hostage, and the Authority sent Sheamus out there for a match with Ambrose that Ambrose won off a distraction roll-up when Randy Orton walked out. My heart nearly stopped when I saw Randy Orton come out, because I take that to mean that Randy Orton and Sheamus are going to have a match at Battleground. Please tell me that Randy Orton and Sheamus are not going to have a match at Battleground. Made my thoughts very clear on what I think of Randy Orton and Sheamus and the chemistry they have together. As in, they have none. With other guys, they have chemistry. You know, Sheamus and Ziggler had tons of great matches, even though Sheamus won every single one of them. Just about. Sheamus and Bryan. One of the best matches those two ever had. Extreme Rules 2012. Great match. Randy Orton had chemistry with some guys, too. Randy Orton and Christian had the great feud all those years ago. Randy Orton and Sheamus, they don't have it. They don't have it. I talked about this last week. It's like cat piss and pig vomit. They just don't go well together. Some guys don't go well together. And these two are two guys that when they're in the ring, I have no excitement. There's nothing. The crowd is dead. People don't care. People start waves, and they start stupid bullshit chants. And now we're going to get a program between the two of these guys. That's just great. They show the Ed Council commercial from months ago. I first saw this, I mean, at least 6 months ago. With Roman Reigns singing and dancing to I'm a Little Teapot with his daughter. Or I'm a Little Teapot. Is it Teapot or Teacup? I think it's Teapot. I'm a Little Teapot. He was singing with his daughter. This would play into the show later on. That's why they showed it. R-Truth beat King Jobber with a roll-up in about 30 seconds. Total comedy match. Barrett laid him out with the bullhammer afterward. I hope he bullhammers the next writer who hands him bullshit like this. We were told that John Cena was out with back contusions, severe muscle spasms and bruising. Aren't contusions and bruises basically the same thing? I've always been of the impression that they're basically the same thing, but apparently they're separate. Look at them, trying to be all fancy with their vocabulary. It's like when somebody would get hit in the head and Gorilla Monsoon would say, so-and-so got hit right in the occipital protuberance. And then Ventura or Heenan, one of them, I can't remember which, would say, no, he got hit in the head, stupid. Don't be cute. I still remember when Steve Austin dropped Triple H from about 50 feet up, upside down in a car, and I think he missed maybe a week with what they called multiple contusions. He shows up the next week looking fine, not a scratch on him. What do these contusions look like? As Triple H showed up, he looked perfectly fine a week after being dropped upside down in a car from 50 feet in the air. So the important thing is that John Cena was not here on this show, not even for the dark match. They kept him off the show completely to sell the beating from Kevin Owens the night before, as they should have. So kudos to them for that. Kevin Owens said when John Cena told him he belonged after their match on Sunday, it was the most insulting thing anybody has ever said to him. He knows he belongs. He doesn't need his career to be validated by John Cena. He didn't before. But now he wants the U.S. title, so that's going to be our next match between them at Battleground. I do have to say one thing before I move on here. So he's out there and he's saying, you know, before I know I said I didn't want your U.S. title because I already have my NXT title, but you know what? Now I want your title. And, you could spin that, I guess, because he knows maybe the U.S. title is important to John Cena, so he wants it now. You know, people change their minds. That's basically what he said. And that's true, right? That's true enough. You know, but between that and you heard the beginning of the podcast, I played some audio from that sit-down interview that Kevin Owens had with Michael Cole. And he's saying that, you know, you keep telling me that in my very first match in WWE, I beat John Cena, but that NXT title, isn't that part of WWE? I find that insulting. And even in that interview, Owen says, and I know I said the same thing myself, but you know what? It wasn't my first match in WWE. It's almost like the writers don't know the character as well as they should. So they have Owens go out there and they say all this stuff that Kevin Owens would not and should not be saying. And then I don't know if it's Triple H or whoever, but then in other interviews later on, it's almost like the Kevin Owens character has to now backtrack, right? Well, you know before I said I didn't want the U.S. title, but now I do, but here's why. Or, I know before I said that, yeah, I beat John Cena in my first match, but actually, I'm kind of pissed off that people say that. It really wasn't my first match. They got to be careful here, because there's been a lot of contradictions as far as the character goes. I feel like Owens, not on his own, but that's why maybe it's Triple H or somebody is, after the fact, in these interviews, having the character, they have to like go back and explain all of the stupid stuff that they said before. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only one who noticed that, but I just wish there wouldn't be so many contradictions in his interviews. So I don't know who's scripting his interviews for him, but that person needs to, I think that person needs to brush up on their homework. So Owen said that he was going to issue an NXT open challenge for the NXT championship, which was accepted by Dolph Ziggler and his now corrected Megadeth patch on his jacket. He's such a big fan of theirs, it was misspelled on Sunday. I don't know what's going on with Dolph Ziggler. I really don't. You know, he comes out there with that stupid headband and the jacket, and I think he may be wearing eyeliner now. He thinks he's in some 80s hair band. You know, he's got a beautiful woman with him now when he comes out to the ring, and he dresses like something out of a fucking John Hughes movie. But, you know, I gotta say, as ridiculous as the guy looks, and believe me, he looks pretty ridiculous, he can still work. He can still work his magic in the ring. Him and Owens had an excellent match. This was awesome. Owens won with the pop-up powerbomb. Owens is just on fire right now. He is incapable, it seems, of having a bad match. Although, well, it wasn't bad, but we'll talk about Chinlock City with Samoa Joe when I get to the NXT review. But find this match with Owens and Ziggler. I know a lot of you don't watch Raw anymore because, you know, well, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why a lot of you don't watch Raw, all of which are valid, by the way. And you only listen to this podcast to get caught up on what's going on. Well, I'm telling you, you need to go out and find this one match and watch it. That's how good this match was. And as far as the Ziggler stuff, I know there's been a lot of rumors about Ziggler's contract coming up in the next few months. There's been rumors floating that he's not happy and may want to leave the company. We've heard this before. I'm sure Ziggler is very unhappy with how he's being booked. But when push comes to shove, does he have the balls to walk away from what I'm sure is a good money deal and good exposure on television? Does he have the balls to walk away from that, like Justin Gabriel did, and like John Morrison did, and like a lot of other people have done, and venture out on his own, on the indies, or in ROH, or in Lucha Underground? Does he have the guts to do it? That's really what it boils down to, because if his contract is coming up, hey, he controls his own destiny. He can go wherever he wants. I know WWE tried so hard to get Morrison to sign on that dotted line, and Morrison's like, no, I'm out of here. I'm not happy. I'm not happy with how I'm being booked. And really, if you look at Morrison and how he was being booked back in 2011 before he left, it was very similar to Ziggler. Here's a guy that has the potential to be a lot higher up on the card, maybe even main event level. But for whatever reason, they just don't have the faith in him. And also, by the way, you know, if we're being honest here, and I said it all the time about John Morrison, that guy couldn't cut a promo to save his life. Dolph Ziggler ain't exactly lighting the world on fire with his promos either. In fact, Dolph Ziggler's pretty goddamn terrible on promos in WWE. So I think there's a lot of similarities with him and Morrison. So I say, just go for the gold here. Just do exactly what Morrison did and go to Lucha Underground. I think Dolph Ziggler and Lucha Underground would be really, really fun. And the matches he could have with Morrison and Puma and all those guys, And probably have a lot better chance to be a top guy, maybe even a champion, in Lucha Underground. I think he could have some kick-ass matches with the guys in that promotion. And Lucha Underground is the best wrestling show on television now anyway, so I would love to see Dolph Ziggler take a chance in Lucha Underground. I don't know if that's something he would consider. And we also still don't have any confirmation of a second season, which is getting me more and more worried as each week passes by. I think they will be renewed. I hope they are. If they are, I think Ziggler ought to give that some thought. Paige was backstage trying to rally all of the Divas together, like a union against the Bella Twins. And like all attempts at a union in WWE, this one failed. I feel like we're just waiting out the clock for the inevitable Charlotte call-up to help Paige destroy the Bellas. I mean, they should call up Charlotte and Sasha together. I mean, this Divas division needs a complete makeover. I still don't think that they're taking that title off Nikki until September or October when she breaks AJ's record as the longest reigning Divas champion, or at least comes very close. Maybe they'll do an angle where she's like a day away and then she gets beat for the belt. They've come this far, though, so I figure they probably are just going to wait and have her beat the record. The most insulting part of this entire segment, besides the acting, was when the Bellas finally arrived. Okay, they were not alerted that Paige had called this meeting of the Divas roster. Now Nikki and Brie show up, and Nikki starts talking about helping Stephanie beat Brie back at SummerSlam to first win the championship, and how she's had the support of the Authority ever since. And then she looks over when she mentions how she helped Stephanie beat Brie at SummerSlam. She looks over at her sister and says, "Sorry." And Brie is all like, "It's okay. It's okay. Fuck you." Seriously. Fuck everybody who had anything to do with that whole Bella storyline last year. I just find the whole thing completely insulting. As a fan, as a viewer, I just feel completely insulted when they script shit like that. Randy Orton and Kane had a match. Oh, no, 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 no. I don't think so. Miz beat Big Show by countout when he was distracted by Ryback on commentary. I have nothing else to add to that. Roman Reigns came out, said he wanted Bray Wyatt's ass because Bray Wyatt cost him the Money in the Bank ladder match last week. And Bray Wyatt shook the ladder when Reigns was just fingertips away from pulling the briefcase down. So these two guys are now feuding. Wyatt appeared on the TitanTron for a promo. What I got out of this is that he was very upset that Roman Reigns stole his opportunity to be in the Money in the Bank match. Because if you'll recall, Roman Reigns beat Bray Wyatt in a match on Raw a few weeks back when Roman was fighting for the right to stay in the match. The Authority had him run the gauntlet, wrestled Wade Barrett, he wrestled Mark Henry, and then he wrestled Bray Wyatt to end the show and he beat him. So I guess had Wyatt won that match, he would have taken Roman's spot in the Money in the Bank match. Wyatt then pulled out a photo of Roman playing with his daughter from that Ad Council commercial that played earlier. And Roman just had this look of disbelief on his face. I like this, and I'll tell you why. Maybe had they done this a few months ago before WrestleMania, in the build-up to Reigns and Lesnar, it would have possibly spared him from a lot of the hate that he ended up getting. But I think humanizing him as a family man is a great idea. You see this guy playing with his daughter, somebody's threatening his family, threatening his daughter. How can you root against this guy, right? How can you possibly boo this man who's, you know, just fighting for his family? He can be the ass kicker that he should be. I'm not saying he should be dancing to, I'm a little teapot every single week. Put a pink tutu on him like Mr. Nanny. I'm not saying that you should do that. In fact, please don't. Do not do that, whatever you do. But I think he can be an ass kicker, but also put a human face on him that makes people empathize with him and sympathize with him. If this guy, let's say somebody like Bray, is fucking around with this guy's family, especially his kid, what father wouldn't relate to that? I think it's a good way to try to get him cheered, and it creates interest in this feud depending on where they go with it. How far are they willing to take this? That's my question. I don't want them to put, you know, custody of the kid on the line in a match like they did with Ray and Eddie and Dominic. Remember that whole storyline? They had a ladder match for custody of Ray's kid. I mean, come on. But, you know, was this just a one-time thing? Just to get heat on Bray for that one segment? Or are they going to push this further? Is Roman's family going to be part of this storyline going forward? They have 4 more weeks before they build this match at Battleground. They better have some pretty compelling stuff to build this match up. I hope they go further with it. You know, Wyatt is just a demented fuck. How demented are they willing to go with him? Machine Gun Kelly was out next to sing his new song in his hometown of Cleveland. These little mini concerts they sometimes have are generally a complete waste of time, but this one at least served a purpose. So he finishes his song, rap, whatever it was. He is going back up the ramp. He's kind of walking backwards up the ramp, looking out at the crowd and applauding, I guess, himself. Kevin Owens walks out on stage, and he sarcastically begins clapping for Machine Gun Kelly. So MGK went to go shake Kevin Owens' hand. Owens just stared at him. And then, after singing a song about kids dying in wars and how the world needs a little more love, I think that was the name of the song, actually, a little more love, MGK, unprovoked, proceeds to shove Kevin Owens. He physically assaulted Kevin Owens. What a hypocrite. Owens was completely justified in what he did next. He kicked MGK in the gut, and he powerbombed him off the stage onto a crash pad down below. So, yes, they copied the angle with Eric Bischoff and the Outsiders from the Great American Bash back in 1996, almost to the day, almost in the same area even of the stage. I mean, Bischoff's bump was more impressive. I mean, he got folded up like an accordion. Plus, he got powerbombed by a 7-foot-tall guy. So, I mean, he was way up there. Bischoff got some hang time on that bump. And he was hardly a professional, you know, bumper. He wasn't a professional at taking bumps. Floor was maybe only 3 feet down here for this angle. But still, I thought it was great. I thought this was fantastic. Gave me so much pleasure to see MGK go flying through the air like that. He shoved Owens. Owens never put his hands on the guy, only after he was provoked into doing so. He got punked by some C-level celebrity on his own show. He couldn't let that shit stand. But I haven't heard anybody else point that out, the hypocrisy of this guy going out there and singing a song about a little more love, a little more love. And this motherfucker goes and puts his hands on Kevin Owens. What did you think was going to happen? The guy's a hypocrite. He got exactly what he deserved. And to end the show, the Authority, they built this up the entire 3 hours. They were going to name Seth Rollins next challenger for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, which turned out to be the Beast, Brock Lesnar. They're bringing Brock back early. I figured this would be the main event of SummerSlam. Instead, they're doing it at Battleground. July 19, it's going to be Brock Lesnar against Seth Rollins for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. I don't think Brock gets the belt back, which just begs the question, what kind of fuck finish are we going to get on this show? Not to say that Brock can't get the belt back. I mean, I could envision a scenario, I guess, where Brock gets the belt back and maybe Sheamus cashes in at SummerSlam. And, you know, I don't know. It depends how long they want to drag out that Roman Reigns-Bray Wyatt feud. Are they going to have another match at SummerSlam, or is Roman going to go ahead and get a title rematch at SummerSlam? There's a few different ways they can go with this. I think it's way too early to predict. But I just don't feel like, I don't know, I just don't feel like Brock's winning the belt back on this show. But we'll see. This is a match that had to happen. I'm happy they're doing it. This is going to be, I think this match is going to be awesome. I really do.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Joey Styles tweeted to a fan, the entire July 4th WWE event from Tokyo, Japan will stream live on the WWE Network and will then immediately be available on demand. So there you have it. Brock and Kofi, the match we've all been waiting for. We're going to get to see it. And if it's going up on demand right after, then I don't have to wake up at 6:30 in the morning on a Saturday to watch it. Although I'm usually up around then anyway for reasons I can't explain. I was actually told something pretty cool this week about NXT touring, but it's not a done deal yet, so I probably shouldn't say anything. I don't want to get anybody in trouble. Let's talk about Samoa Joe against Kevin Owens. First time in a long time these two have been in the ring together. I know they wrestled in PWG. I don't recall them wrestling in Ring of Honor, but they may have. I don't think their time there overlapped. This felt like a big deal. It was a good match, but my expectations were way too high. I was expecting more. What I got felt like it felt like one long chin lock by Kevin Owens until Joe made his comeback. So many chin locks. Randy Orton accused him of gimmick infringement. That's how many chin locks this guy used in this match. But, you know, I understand why Owens does it. It would be very easy for people to cheer for this guy. They still cheer for him anyway. Some people do, especially after killing Machine Gun Kelly. I mean, come on. Thank you, Based Owens. It really is hard to boo this man, but he's a heel, and he's supposed to get heel heat, so what's the easiest way to get heel heat? Rest holds. That and by bailing out of the ring at the start of every match. He's trying to get the people to boo him. So I get that, but it made for a really slow match. Joe fought back. They fought to the outside. The referee could not pull them apart. Then he got caught in between them. Poor guy. And he threw the match out. Huge pull-apart brawl to end the show. Keeps the door open for a future match between the two of them, although if Owens really is going to finish up with NXT, I don't know when that might be, since Joe ain't making the main roster anytime soon. But this was their first meeting. You want to save the really good stuff for down the line when it means more, so I get it. I get it. I don't want this to sound like I'm hating on the match, because I'm not. And Kevin Owens is just so great right now. I really hope the guy stays healthy. I've got this irrational fear. You know, I know he's had knee problems before. He had one earlier this year. I think he had his knee scoped. You know, sometimes it feels like when guys really start to hit their stride. Look at Alberto. Alberto left WWE. He became the hottest commodity in independent wrestling, right? He signed a deal with Ring of Honor. He was talking to TNA. He was wrestling in AAA, became the AAA Mega Heavyweight Champion. Lucha Underground, he signed with them. He was doing other indie shows. House of Hardcore, I think, for Tommy Dreamer. This guy was the most sought-after commodity in wrestling for a while earlier this year. And then what happened? He tore his quad. I don't know if it was a full tear, partial tear, but he got hurt. And you don't hear as much about him now, because I don't think he's been as out there as he probably would have been had he not gotten hurt. But he was probably running him. Look, he was burning the candle at both ends. It was bound to happen. So Kevin Owens now is having this really great run. He's wrestling all these different guys. He's got all these different beefs with Finn Balor and John Cena and Samoa Joe and Sami Zayn. All these different people. And that's usually when disaster strikes. And that's exactly what it would be for WWE if Kevin Owens got hurt right now, considering everything that he's involved in. So hopefully I didn't just jinx the guy by saying that. But the guy's on a roll. Kenny in our Facebook group brought up the backstage Dana Brooke promo on this show and how not one time did Dana Brooke make eye contact with either the camera or Devin Taylor, who was interviewing her. I've talked about this before. The reason that she doesn't make eye contact, at least with the camera, I don't know why you wouldn't look at the person who's interviewing you, is because that's what they teach them now. Down at the Performance Center, down at NXT, you are not allowed to look into the camera. Now, maybe they make exceptions every now and then, especially if you're higher up on the food chain. They're not going to fire you if you look in the camera. But you watch them. Watch these promos on NXT week after week after week. Even on the main show. Watch Raw. Watch a Randy Orton promo or a Sheamus promo backstage on Monday Night Raw. They never, ever look at the camera. They do sometimes look at, like, Renee. But a lot of times they're looking down or they're looking off into the distance. And I'm always wondering, what are they looking at? Are they looking at cue cards? You know, are there two people, you know, fucking off to the side that they're watching? Like, what's going on here? Where are they? Why are their eyes not on me? They're talking to me. Well, I mean, technically they're talking to the interviewer. But they are. They're speaking to us, right? They're speaking to the fans. They're telling the fans that they're going to kick so-and-so's ass later, that they're going to win the title. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. That's how interviews always were. Some of the best promos, we just talked about Dusty Rhodes last week, one of the best promo guys in the history of wrestling, and some of those great promos, like the Hard Times promo, he looked right into the camera. He looked at you. They're speaking to us. They're supposed to be speaking to the fans. Instead, I find myself distracted the entire promo because I don't know where their eyes are. So if you're ever wondering, why do they do that? Dana Brooke, oh, she's so terrible. It's not Dana Brooke's fault. And she's new to this. So for her, she probably thinks, okay, I guess that's the norm. I'm not supposed to look in the camera. That's how they teach people. Lance Storm was a guest trainer a few different times, I think, down at NXT. He's spoken about this publicly himself. He was down there. He saw it. He heard it. He says they tell people, do not look into the camera. And he doesn't agree with it, and neither do I. I don't understand for the life of me why they do that. They must have some reason. I don't know if that's a Kevin Dunn thing or what. That reeks of Kevin Dunn. But I don't know. I don't know if it's a Vince McMahon thing. I can't imagine it's a Triple H thing. I think it's just completely idiotic. Maybe that's part of the reason why these people can't make a connection with the audience, because they don't fucking look at us. But don't blame Dana Brooke. That's how they're teaching them. You are not allowed to look at... I mean, have you ever heard of something so ridiculous? Don't look at the camera. It's like when they teach them not to interact too much with the fans. I had a few people write into me. There were two people who wrote into me at different times telling me, oh, Finn Balor's got no charisma, he's got no personality. He barely interacts with the crowd when he comes out because they don't want you to interact with the crowd when you come out. And again, I ask, why? Why would you not want the wrestlers to interact with the fans? Why would you not want a heel to go jaw-jack with the fans? At least Kevin Owens, in the middle of his matches, will look out to the crowd and say, oh, the champ is here, and he'll make comments like that, and the people react. Because the people want to feel like they're part of the show. I don't want to feel like I'm in some... It's like a science experiment, where I'm on the outside looking in, and the people who are on the inside have no idea that they're being watched. To me, that just doesn't work. It's supposed to be based on personal interaction. And when you do a promo, looking into the camera, you're looking at me. I'm looking at you. I want to feel like, you know, I'm being spoken to. I'm not on the outside watching some, you know, person having a conversation. I feel like a voyeur, like I'm watching these shows. I don't know whose idea that is. I think it's completely stupid. But don't blame the talent. They're just doing what they're told to do. The absolute best thing on the entire show, I'm not going to do a segment-by-segment review here. We'll wrap up with this. The best thing on the entire show, you have to see this if you didn't see it, the Finn Balor video package that they aired, part one, which is great because that means this week we're going to get a part two. This reminded me a little bit of the independent documentary that was done on Devitt right before he came to WWE. It was basically just a look back at his career. They had clips of him on the indies overseas when he was just starting out, straight through his days in Insane Championship Wrestling. They actually used ICW footage. They took creative license with the timeline here in the video package. They made it look like he had left ICW and was now going to New Japan, which is what they're going to show us on the next show. But in reality, he was already in New Japan. The footage that they showed of him saying goodbye on that ICW show was because he was headed to WWE. But that didn't bother me. I mean, whatever. It's just what they do. It did not make this video package any less good than it was. This was just so well done. I think they're doing a hell of a job building this guy up for this championship match in Tokyo on July 4th. I have no doubt in my mind there is 0% chance he loses that match. Not just because of videos like this and because Kevin Owens is on the main roster. It's pretty obvious that Owens is going to drop the title. But also, if you remember right before WrestleMania, Finn Balor got a championship match against Kevin Owens, and they had a great match, and Kevin Owens beat him clean with the pop-up powerbomb. So now they're going to have another match. I can't imagine they're going to have Owens go over twice clean on this guy and retain the championship. That makes no sense. This is basically Balor's rematch with Kevin Owens. He lost all those months ago, and that loss has just been gnawing away at him, and he's fought his way back to be the number one contender. The stars are aligned. They're going to be in Japan. He's got to win the championship. There is a 0% chance that Finn Balor, unless he gets hurt between now and then, is not winning this championship on July 4th. And as predictable as it is, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. I wouldn't have them do it any other way. He has to win the championship. It's going to be a great moment. And so I just think this video did a hell of a job of building him up. They also interviewed Becky Lynch for the piece. She started crying. She was talking about the school that Devitt opened up in Ireland and how, had he not done so, she would not be where she is today. Because it wasn't like she had this burning passion to be a wrestler and was going to fly herself all over the world to train to be a wrestler. I think it was something where she needed a place to work out, and she, you know, became familiar with this wrestling thing and she fell in love with it. So she credits Balor with basically her career. It's just pretty amazing, though. You know, the dude opened up a wrestling school when he was like 20 years old, 22, whatever he was. It's just crazy. But I can't wait for part two. I just wonder how much Bullet Club stuff they would show. If they even got the rights from New Japan to show any New Japan footage. My guess would be they probably just... they talk about his time in Japan. They show maybe some still photos and give credit to, like, Pro Wrestling Illustrated or something like that. But if they actually got footage from New Japan, that would be awesome. Hopefully they did. Gunner is gone from TNA. I'm not sure if he was let go or if he opted to walk out on his own. Gunner was one of those guys that Bob Ryder on Twitter went, last year online and said, oh, we're so proud to have signed Gunner to a new multi-year deal with TNA, just like Bram. They signed Bram to about four multi-year deals in the span of 1 year. So Gunner is gone. I don't know what happened, but I think it was his decision. I guess you got to make room for that salary they supposedly offered Rey Mysterio to come into the company. Yeah, they wanted Mysterio to come in. They made him an offer. That's like when they made a play for Alberto Del Rio for some ridiculous amount of money. Where are they getting this money from? How are they offering money, real money, to guys like this to come in when the product is in the state that it's in? Meanwhile, another TNA original is gone, and they're busy trying to sign some, you know, WWE reject or whatever. I mean, that's not really... Ray's not really a WWE reject. Actually, Ray chose to leave WWE. If it were up to them, he'd still be there. But still, he's old news. Ray's not somebody that, like, TNA should sign and build their company around. I mean, what can you expect to get out of Rey Mysterio at this point? Why would you throw... You have to throw a lot of money. I mean, the guy's not going to come in for anything less than really good money. I just don't understand the mentality of it. Let's lose all of these TNA originals, like Gunner, like AJ Styles, like Chris Daniels, like Kazarian, like Samoa Joe, whether they fire them or they just are treating them and booking them so poorly they decide to leave on their own. Let's get rid of all of the original talent that we built this company on, all the young guys that we were hoping to build this company on going forward, and let's throw all of our resources together. Let's throw the $7.14 we have left for a budget to try to get Rey Mysterio and Alberto Del Rio. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I just don't understand the mentality. I mean, I guess in their mind, he's a big name, and so we need a big name to kind of get interest in the product. Look, if that's the mentality and if that's how you're thinking, you're done. You're done. Because let's say you actually get Ray to sign. Let's say you put a chloroform rag over Ray's face and you grab his hand and you actually sign the documents. That's the only way Rey Mysterio is ever going to sign with TNA. So now you got Rey Mysterio under contract to TNA. Now what? Now what? What? A boom period? It just are they really thinking these things through? I don't know that they are. Now, the other bad piece of news for TNA is that they also lost their TV deal. In Australia, their final broadcast on Main Event TV down there is going to be at the end of the month, I think June 30th, I think. And then they're done. There's also an unconfirmed report that UTA, the talent agency they hired to find them a new TV deal last time before they settled on Destination America, UTA is once again back out there looking for a new TV deal for TNA. Now, again, this is unconfirmed, but that is the rumor. And if that's true, that would confirm that TNA... is going to need a new TV home come September. It would confirm what TNA is so far unwilling to confirm, which is that Destination America is kicking them to the curb and they're going to be homeless as far as TV goes in September. Well, you know, there's always public access TV. So a lot of moving parts right now in TNA, a lot of just weird decisions, and still a lot of uncertainty when it comes to their future in September. Nothing really has changed on that front. Ring of Honor. Let's talk about ROH. I saw the show this past week. This was before Best in the World on Friday night, which I did not see. The highlights of the TV show included Cedric Alexander handing Moose his first loss in Ring of Honor. Veda Scott pulled out a wrench at one point, wanted Moose to use it, but he refused. Alexander had no such problem, though. He grabbed the wrench when the ref was distracted. He waffled Moose with it and got the pin. I was shocked. I mean, I'm watching this and I was stunned. Dude's gone unbeaten for like a year. This was just, you know, some random show. It was the go-home show for their pay-per-view, and the guy suffers his first loss. I mean, it was pretty cool in that I didn't see it coming. It's nice to be unpredictable like that every now and then. I definitely did not see that coming. And the match itself actually wasn't bad. You know, Moose is still very inexperienced, but he's unbelievably agile for a guy his size. I've seen him do leapfrogs and drop kicks, and he gets some serious height on them. It's very impressive to watch. Yeah, WWE is going to snatch this guy up the first chance they get. I don't care what their new policy supposedly is about not signing guys from TNA and ROH. When Moose becomes available, if he wants to go to WWE, he will be there. I guarantee you he will be there. He is exactly what they're looking for. Matt Sydal and ACH had a match against Hiroshi Tanahashi and Tetsuya Naito from New Japan Pro Wrestling. Tanahashi on my TV will never not be a win. This match was freaking fantastic. So much fun this match was. ACH mocked Tanahashi's air guitar at one point, which did not please him. So many great near falls near the end of the match. It just degenerated into chaos. near the end. Tanahashi hit his high fly flow frog splash on ACH for the win. I love this so much. But I do have one question. What is the deal with Naito and the eye thing? Can somebody fill me in on this? You know what I'm talking about. He opens his eye up real wide in this goofy way. Is there a story there? Is there a reason why he does this? Is that just or is it just some thing that he does? It's so stupid, but it's funny. Show ended with a contract signing for Best in the World main event between Jay Briscoe and Jay Lethal, champion against champion, title for title. The pay-per-view was Friday night. I was not home, so I didn't see it, but I heard the main event was excellent. And Jay Lethal, the heel, won the title clean from Jay Briscoe. So Jay Lethal is the new Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion. Really happy for the guy. He's super talented. It's really a loss for TNA they let him go, and for WWE, you know, for not giving him a look. I know some people will disagree with me on that. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Jay Lethal's going to walk in and he could be a, you know, WWE World Heavyweight Champion. I just think Jay Lethal's the kind of guy who they could really use right now. I mean, he's a great worker. He's got personality. He can be funny. He can be entertaining, which is what they love. WWE, you know, it's like a clown show. They want you to be a clown. They want to know you can make people laugh. You can make people happy. You can make people sad. And you can also wrestle. He can do all of those things. And he's young. I don't know if he's 30 years old, or he may not even be 30 yet, maybe 29. I don't know, but it's Ring of Honor's gain, and now he is their world champion, and now he'll have a chance. You know what? This is his chance. This is Jay Lethal's chance now to prove himself as a draw on top, because now he is undeniably the number one guy in the company. He's got the world title. He'll be defending it against Roderick Strong at their next show, their next pay-per-view coming up in July. Give it a couple of months, and we'll see. We'll see what kind of draw Jay Lethal can be on top. And if he proves to be a draw, then maybe WWE will change their tune on him. Lucha Underground. We end with the best. Lucha Underground, once again, the best wrestling show week to week on television. Lucha Underground, by the way, is eligible for an Emmy Award this year in the category of Outstanding Structured Reality Program. I'm not even sure what the hell that means. But they are, in fact, up for an Emmy Award. Voting is ongoing if you are a voting member of the Emmy Academy or whatever the fuck it's called. And they will announce the final nominees for each category on July 16th. So they're not going to announce the winners. They're going to boil it down to the final nominees, and that announcement will be made on the 16th. I so badly want Lucha Underground to be nominated. Not because I think it's a great show, but because I know it would make Kevin Dunn's head explode. It would make Kevin Dunn's head explode into little itty-bitty pieces. I mean, brain matter would splatter all over the walls. It would be so great. It consumes him that he's never been nominated for an Emmy before, according to Jim Cornette. You know, Kevin Dunn's been the head production guy for WWE for so long. And look, production-wise, they do a great job. But apparently he feels like he should be nominated for an Emmy, and he never has been. So for Lucha Underground in their first season, this wrestling show, to come along and be nominated, oh, would that be fantastic. I don't even care if they win. I just want them to be nominated. That would be fantastic. There's no telling what this guy would do. He may go on a rampage if that happens. This was literally a one-match show this week. Their version of an Iron Man match called All Night Long. Prince Puma defending the Lucha Underground title against Johnny Mundo. I was just talking a little earlier about John Morrison. He's tearing it up in Lucha Underground. He's awesome. I don't know how they timed this match, because the first time they put the countdown clock up on the screen, it didn't feel like that much time had elapsed, and it was already like 25 minutes had gone by, and I called bullshit on that. I don't know how they timed this out. They may have been playing around with that. The match itself went about 40, 45 minutes, I think, because it looked like no time had elapsed during the commercial breaks. This was their first match together between Puma and Mundo since their match on the debut episode of Lucha Underground back on October 29th of last year. Puma got the first fall about 5 minutes in with a cradle. Mundo tied it up a few minutes later with a cradle of his own, back bridge into a cradle while holding the ropes. So they were all knotted up, one fall apiece. And then Johnny Mundo hit Prince Puma with a crowbar to the face. Yes, a crowbar to the face knocked him out on the outside. The sound that this crowbar made, whether it was gimmicked or they just added in the sound effect in post-production afterwards, I don't know. Brutal. I mean, he fucking destroyed this guy. Just whacked him right. And I actually laughed, too, because after the fact, some people put up like animated GIFs of some of the different spots in the matches on Lucha Underground. And there was one GIF that had Mundo just rearing back and just waffling him in the face with a wrench. And I don't know why, I just laughed. Just, it's so funny. He just fucking hit him in the face with a wrench. So he's out cold. And he sold it. I mean, he was just like a dead body on the floor, completely just dead weight. You know, if this was WWE, John Cena would have kicked out. But not only did Mundo roll Puma's dead body back inside and pin him, he followed it right up with the Moonlight Drive for another pinfall. That put him up 3-1. And then Starship Pain to put him up 4-1. And it makes sense, right? If that were me in there and I just wrecked this guy with a crowbar and he was out cold, I'd pin him as many times as I possibly could. Are you kidding me? I'd pin him 10 times if I could. And that's what Mundo did. Not 10 times. He did it 4 or 3. But it created this great story for the remainder of the match. Can the champion play catch-up? Because if not, we're guaranteed to have a new champion. This guy's up 4-1. All Mundo has to do now is run out the clock. So it creates drama. So at this point in the match, Mundo went. He found a giant ladder. He proceeded to spear the ladder right into Puma's face once he got up. Didn't get out of the way fast enough. So he just mowed him down with this ladder. Now, there's an area down below where the house band plays. If you've ever seen Lucha Underground before, they have a band. They're kind of on this elevated platform. And down below, there's like another aisleway. There's this area that we don't ordinarily get to see. Mundo starts setting up tables in that area. Puma ends up cutting him off. And I think it was Puma who ends up, he kind of takes over. I think he's the one who sets up like another 3 or 4 tables. He stacks them. So imagine 4 tables, you know, one on top of the other, next to each other. So table, table, and then next to that, table, table. So you knew something crazy was coming. Mundo is just trying to kill time. He climbs the ladder up to where the band is located. He demands that they play some music, which I thought was funny. And they oblige. So in the middle of this match, now the band starts playing a song. Puma now starts climbing up the ladder after him. He got a 2x4 from somewhere. He whacks Mundo in the head with it. Mundo was kind of, he was bent over trying to knock Puma off the ladder, and Puma just hit him right in the head with the 2x4. So now Puma climbs up. Both guys now are on top of this bandstand. And Puma grabs a guitar. And you know what comes next. Right over Mundo's head. Whacks him over the head with the guitar. He goes down. Mundo clearly blades. Now he's bleeding from the forehead. And Puma then spears Johnny Mundo off the balcony and down through the stacked tables below. Matt Stryker, this time not Vampiro, shouts, "Holy shit," at what he just witnessed. Although we did get a goddamn from Vampiro earlier in the match when Mundo gave Puma, he gave him this vicious neck breaker from the middle rope onto the apron, and then he fell out to the floor. I love the way that Vampiro does it, too. He didn't just go, "goddamn." He goes, "goddamn!" I can't even do it. Vampiro is awesome. But Stryker was the one who was going nuts here. And I got to give credit to Matt Stryker. He got a little goofy. I thought he was a little over the top toward the end of this match. There was one part where he just would not shut up. It was like the last few minutes of the match, and he was trying to really build up drama like Jim Ross used to do. And he was doing a good job, but he goes overboard with it. And I just, at one point, I'm like, shut up. Shut the fuck up. He wouldn't shut up. But aside from that, I thought Stryker did a hell of a job here in this match. They also had a mat underneath those tables to help cushion the fall, but still an absolutely insane spot for them to try. They come back from break. We get, I think, only our second replay maybe in the history of the show. They show them from different angles falling off. One of the rare times that we get replays in Lucha Underground. I wish WWE would steal a page out of their book. The replays in WWE, I just talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and maybe now I'm just noticing it even more, but it almost seems like ever since then, especially Money in the Bank, they've taken it to a whole new level now. The replays are out of control in WWE. You fucking sneeze, and they show 3 different replays, including slow-mo. And in that time, you'll miss someone hitting their finishing move. And then when you walk backstage, you get fired by Vince McMahon for sneezing because he hates sneezing. I don't know what he expects people to do. Pinch their nose and blow their brains out the back of their head? I mean, really. So, 10 minutes. 10 minutes is all Puma has left to retain his championship. He's down 4-1. He drags Mundo's dead carcass back to the ring, but It's a nice distance away, and Puma's pretty banged up himself after that spot, so he keeps falling down as he's dragging Mundo. Finally, he gets him into the ring, and what happens? Mundo kicks out. No, I'm just kidding. The dude's out, and Puma gets the pinfall, narrowing the deficit to 4-2. They have a back-and-forth exchange that ends then with Puma delivering a spinning Michinoku driver for the three, so now it's 4-3. And then came one of my favorite parts of the match. Johnny Mundo realizes there's only 5 minutes left. He's up 4-3. All he needs to do is run out the clock. That's it. Run out the clock and you're the champion. So he starts running outside the ring. Puma gives chase. Every time he catches up, Mundo manages to avoid him and runs away. I don't think I have ever seen that in a WWE Iron Man match before, and it makes total sense. You are a dick heel. Run away. I love this. It just made so much sense. Mundo runs up the staircase to avoid Puma. Looks like Puma's doomed. Puma's not going to catch up to him. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, comes Alberto El Patron. Last time we saw him, he got thrown through Dario Cueto's window by Mundo, so he's back for revenge. He sends Mundo rolling back down the stair. He knocked him down the stairs. And Mundo rolls down the staircase. He follows him down there. Now they're at ringside. Alberto throws him into the side of the announce desk, where they implanted a camera. So you could see Mundo being thrown right into it, and Vampiro's reaction to this was just priceless. He throws him back inside, and Puma nails a springboard 450 off the ropes to even the match up at 4 wins apiece. And Alberto gets on the mic. He tells Mundo that if he wins, he's going to take his title, and if Puma wins, well, he's pretty much fucked too. 3 minutes left, crowd's going crazy, they're trading blows back and forth, standing Spanish fly from Johnny Mundo gets two. He then tries for Starship Pain again, but he misses. Puma goes up top for the 630 splash and the pin, and with less than 10 seconds left, time expires, and Prince Puma retains the Lucha Underground Championship. 5 falls to Johnny Mundo's 4. A great, great match. You know, it's tough because I love that Grave Consequences match so much, and it was more intense. It felt more like a fight than this did. But I think I have to give the edge to All Night Long as my new favorite Lucha Underground match, which I guess would make it my new match of the year. I thought this match was fantastic. I was never bored, which is a problem. When you have an hour-long match, or in this case, a 45-minute match, it can be very easy. You start slow, people are bored, they don't really get into it until the last 5 minutes. Not the case here. People were into this almost the entire way. It was quiet in the first few minutes, but they got into it pretty quickly, and yes, they had to use tables and all this other stuff, but, you know, that's fine. I felt like it worked here. It didn't feel like, you know, they were turning it into a garbage match. I mean, it felt to me like just a battle between these guys for something that was very important to them, which was the championship, and so you go all out. When the title's on the line, you do what you have to do. If that means you take a 10-foot dive off some platform and put your opponent through a table, then that's what you're going to do. And I thought the psychology, for the most part, was spot on, especially with Mundo. Him running away, trying to kill time. I just thought that was fantastic. And, I don't really have much more to say than check it out. You can find it online. There's ways that you can watch the show. If you don't have El Rey Network, I don't have El Rey, and I find a way to watch it every week. So if I can, you can too. This show is just, firing on all cylinders right now, and they're building to their big show, Ultima Lucha, August 5th. So I think it's only going to get better from here. But I thought these two just pulled off a hell of a match, and they deserve a lot of credit for it. If you have mailbag questions, you can email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We'll start here with one of our loyal listeners. Malicious Intent, Michael Cuomo from Green Lawn, New York, with Hulk Hogan's first title reign lasting multiple years and not likely to happen again in this post-territory era. Is there anyone in WWE today you would like to see have a multi-year world title reign? Well, first of all, let's not forget CM Punk, 434 days. It wasn't 8 years like Bruno or 4 years like Hogan, but that's still pretty damn long, especially for today. Do I want to see somebody hold on to the championship for multiple years? Honestly, no. No. I don't want to see one person with a stranglehold on the title for multiple years. You know, Brock had his run with the championship. Maybe he'll get it back. I don't think he will. Unless, again, there's going to be money in the bank cash and he drops it quickly again. I think we've seen the last of Brock Lesnar holding the WWE championship for months and months and months because they want their champion on the road full time. They put the title on Brock a lot longer than I think some people thought for a guy who wasn't working house shows, who was barely working the TVs. I don't think they want to go through that again. I really can't think of anybody else on that current roster who I would want to see hold the title for that long. You know, they don't have a whole lot of depth on top right now. So once you've blown through those very few guys on top, what do you do next? Who do you wrestle next? It gets very boring. So no, I don't want to see somebody hold on to the championship for that long. Jesse from Queens, New York. With all these Mount Rushmore questions, I thought it would be funny to ask, who would you put on your Mount Rushmore of jobbers from any generation? I thought about this, and I thought it would be difficult to come up with five, but I came up with five in about 60 seconds. This would be my Mount Rushmore of jobbers. You can't have a Mount Rushmore of jobbers without having the Brooklyn Brawler on there. He's probably the coup de grace when it comes to that. So the Brawler would be on there. Iron Mike Sharp, one of my favorite job guys from the 80s and the early 90s. I loved Iron Mike Sharp. I don't even know why. Just he looked funny. You looked at the guy and went, wow, he does not look like a normal person. And every time he would sell, I mean, I would make fun of Lex Luger because every time Lex Luger would either sell, even when he would be on offense and he would throw a punch, Lex Luger had a very bad habit of screaming. So he would throw a punch and be like, ah! And he would get hit and he'd be like, ah! Every time. Go back and watch a Lex Luger match. Now you won't be able to not notice it. Iron Mike Sharp, when he would sell, I mean, not only would he scream, it would be like, almost like a, like the Bushwhackers. He'd be like, whoa! Like, oh! He was great. He was awesome. I miss jobbers. So Iron Mike Sharp would be on there. Barry Horowitz, good old pat on the back of the shoulder. Barry Horowitz is on there. I still fondly remember his feud with Skip in 1995, which ironically was the year that I almost stopped watching wrestling altogether. And that happened to be the year where they gave Barry Horowitz his first push. I wonder if there's some correlation there. Probably not, actually, because I don't think Horowitz beat Skip until, like, the summer. And I almost stopped watching, like, in February of that year. Boy, that was a bad year. They had some great wrestlers, too. I mean, Owen Hart and the Bulldog and Hakushi. And I mean, there were some really good workers on the roster in 1995, but they were just so creatively bankrupt that year. I came very, very close. And so that's one, two, three. And the fourth one would have to be Dwayne Gill, better known probably to many of you as Gilbert in 1998 in WWE. But he was a job guy for many years. You know, Dwayne Gill, he would come out. He didn't look like anything much at all. He was some small, skinny guy who can take a beating, make the other guys look good. He was around for many, many years. So I'd probably put him on there, too. So those would be my guys. Now, I know I left out probably some guys. If you were an NWA fan back in the day, maybe there's somebody from that territory I'm not remembering who belongs on there. There may be, but those would be my four. Jamie from Glasgow, Scotland. I have a wrestling Sophie's Choice for you, Solomonster. Would you rather be able to only watch wrestling that has taken place up to this point in history, or be able to watch any wrestling that is to come in the future? When you pick one, you can never again go back to the other. Well, it would be awfully hard for me to do this podcast if I can only watch shows prior to today's date. So, for that reason alone, I would have to go with option B. You know, at least I still have my memories in that case. But if I was not doing this podcast, I was thinking about this. If I wasn't doing the sound off, I think my answer would be very different. I think I would go with option A. You know, you can never top the old school stuff. You just can't. It can never be that good. It's just a different business now. Wrestling is very, very different. It's just not the same business that it used to be. It looks different. It works different. The people in it are very different. It's not the same. It's like two totally different things. So you ask yourself, well, which one do you like better? The way it used to be or the way it is now? And I would say the way it used to be, you know? And in some ways, it is different for the better. You know, we could really, if we really wanted to break this down, we could talk about, you know, whether it's drug testing and safety measures they put into place, having more shows, which is good. I'm happy they have more shows than they used to, but the thing is, they go too far, they have too many. There's got to be a happy medium there. You know, you either have too few or too many. So there's a lot of good things, a lot of things that are better now than they were back in the day. But if we're just looking at, you know, wrestling then, wrestling now, you know, I think in more ways it's not for the better. In more ways than not, I think it's not for the better. And if I didn't have to do this show, I think I could be perfectly content being left with my videos and memories of wrestling as it used to be. We're talking WWE, by the way. Yeah, I think we should probably clarify that. And it's easy for me to say that now. When push comes to shove, you know, would I actually do that? Would that be the decision I would make? I don't know. But just thinking about it now, that's how I feel. And finally here, buy or sell. And by the way, I want you guys, when you write into me, you can submit ideas for buy or sell. So if you have a wrestler in mind, then you would like for me to use them for the buy or sell segment. It might be better to come from you guys instead of me just picking the person. So feel free to suggest somebody, and I may use them on the show. But I wanted to do a buy or sell on Jay Lethal. I talked about Jay Lethal earlier, what a talent he is, and I think it's a big loss for TNA, who got rid of him, and for WWE, who never showed any real interest in the guy. And now, as the ROH champion, he's going to have his first real shot to prove himself as a draw on top in a main event position. And I'm going to buy. I'm going to buy on Jay Lethal. I think he's going to prove to be, you know, an attraction for Ring of Honor. I'm not going to say he's going to light the world on fire, you know, business-wise, but I think he'll hold his own. I think he'll do very well as the champion on top. And I think that he's got bigger things in his future. I still feel like he's young enough, he's talented enough. Whatever's happened up to this point, whatever all this talk is about WWE no longer having any interest in plucking guys from ROH now because they're on TV and all this other stuff, I think at the end of the day, it may take a few years. I mean, look at Joe, right? Joe's, what, 36 years old, and now he's in WWE for the first time? I think there's much bigger things in the future for Jay Lethal. And when I say bigger, I mean WWE at some point in the not-too-distant future. I feel the same way about, you know, Adam Cole, too. But I'm going to buy. I'm going to buy on Jay Lethal as the ROH champion. I think he's going to do very well, and I think he's going to move on to bigger and better things because, you know, at the end of the day, they say, you know, the cream always rises to the top. The guy's got too much talent not to make it to the big stage. You know, wherever they slot him when he gets there, I mean, that remains to be seen. I look at Jay Lethal, and I think to myself, they're trying to stock NXT full of indie talent. Jay Lethal could be a big-time player on NXT. Forget the main roster. Why wouldn't you have interest in this guy for NXT? That's probably where he goes first, before he even hits the main roster. And I think he's going to get there. I think he's going to prove himself, and I think he's going to get there. So I'm going to buy on him. But again, if you have ideas for buy-sell going forward, suggest them to me, and I'll pick one each week, and I'll do it here at the end of the show. If you have questions for the mailbag, and again, buy-sell suggestions, email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, @solomonster is my handle on there. I do live blogging during Raw each and every Monday night and during the pay-per-views as well. And please subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesolomonster. Over 13,000 subscribers and counting. I do hope to get some new content up there very soon. I have a lot going on. Personally, right now, it's taken away my time from doing that, but hopefully I'll get back to that very soon. And also, a big thanks to TV Tracks, who was on a little bit of a hiatus there for a few months. I had talked to him several months ago. I knew it was coming. And I saw that some of our videos began popping up again on Trax's channel, so definitely give him a follow as well. TV Tracks, T-R-A-X, on YouTube. Big thank you to him for all the support. We will be back next weekend with a brand new episode 389 of the Solomonster Sounds Off. Until then, have yourselves a great week. Tough Enough, don't forget, Tough Enough debuts Tuesday night on USA. I am planning on checking that out at some point, and if I do, I will have some thoughts on Tough Enough in addition to everything else that we talk about on the show, which is pretty much everything. So that'll be next weekend on 389. Until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week, and we will see you right back here again for more Sound Off next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster Sounds Off.
If WWE were a person, how would you describe them? It's just a very bizarre question. But these are the different options they gave as passionate, talented, funny, modest, except for all those did-you-know facts they pepper us with every single week. Kind, cheerful, sweet, surprising, adventurous, flexible. How the fuck can an organization be flexible? This is a real survey question here. You would think you were going on a date. I have no interest in dating WWE. They're clingy, they're painfully unfunny, and all they do is talk about themselves. They're not my type.
Since 2007, The Salamonster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.